Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
But one of the things that I really wanted to cover in this, because this is a universal, at least for me as a divorce attorney or family law attorney drafting prenups, they are one of the more uncomfortable situations for people to be getting involved in. And that leads to problems in and of itself. You know,
yeah, because you basically have to like go through your whole divorce
right
before you get married.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today, we want prenup. We want prenup. Should you be like Kanye or Jeff Bezos? I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So in my mind, when I hear the word prenup, I instantly think of that Kanye West song, Gold Digger, that he and Jamie Foxx are singing about being rich men pursued by young women, you know, gold diggers for their money and needing a prenup to protect themselves. The lines in the song are, if you ain't no punk, holla, we want prenup, we want prenup. Yeah, it's something you need to have, because when she leaves your ass, she's going to leave with half. And that is, right? That just makes me laugh every time I think of it. But it ties in with what I think the stereotype is for what a prenup, you know, the purpose of a prenup is. It's a way to protect your money, your assets in divorce. And I also think, Rebecca, that people think that only wealthy people need them, that this isn't something that your average person needs, which may or may not be true. So we're going to talk about them. I think that prenups, the use of them is on the rise. I was doing some research for this episode, and a recent Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers survey talked to a bunch of family law attorneys, and about two-thirds of them said that they think that there's been a rise in the number of prenups in just the last 3 years. So I think there's an element of truth that to the idea that a prenup is there to protect assets, but they can do a lot more than that, and there are limits on what they can do. So we're gonna unpack all that for you today and give you an idea about prenups.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I remember when I first started in this business, and the partners that I worked for, who, by the way, were married to other people, then they broke up with their marriage, ended up with each other, a whole level of drama right inside our little office.
Ooh, yeah, and that's drama.
Yeah. Why has that conference room door been so closed so long?
A lot of private consultations going on.
Yeah, so what are they doing in there? Anyway, they ended up getting married, and I remember they didn't have a prenup, and I remember her saying, because we have parity instead of a disparity, meaning that they were similarly situated. You know, they both had about the same in assets, about the same income. They had everything titled separately already, and as long as it wasn't commingled, it wasn't a problem, and they didn't really care that their future earnings would continue to be married. It was not a problem for them. So they didn't sign one, and everybody was really surprised by that. But The truth of the matter is it really just depends on your situation and if there's something that you want to protect. You know, I know a couple that are contemplating a prenup. They're not wealthy, but he has a son from a previous marriage and he wants to protect his home and some future assets for his son. His son has some special needs, and so he wants to make sure that he's taken care of. And so that's another reason why people may do it, to protect children or children from previous marriages and their rights as well. So it really, it just depends on people's situations. But what a prenuptial actually is a written agreement that is signed by both parties and addresses what will happen to assets at the time of a divorce. And sometimes prenuptial agreements even do address what would happen at death. It gets a little bit dicey. I personally, as a lawyer, get a little bit nervous about doing that, just because then people execute a separate document for their estate planning or wills or something, and sometimes they conflict and you have to make sure they harmonize with each other. I have seen many, many prenups that address what happens at death as well. But for the most part, if somebody's coming to a divorce lawyer or marital and family lawyer to have an agreement drafted before marriage, it's to address what would happen at the time of a divorce. And the good news is that you can do that. The bad news is that, you know, sometimes they're not drafted properly or executed properly, or they address things that you shouldn't. And so sometimes they're not upheld, but generally they are. Yeah. I mean, if they're written properly and they address the right things and all the right conditions were present at the time of execution, they are generally upheld.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that goes into a prenup for people. And that first thought is, why do we need to get one? Which is what one of the things you were just talking about, Rebecca. You know, there is that asset protection feature for people who are contemplating getting married. But there are other things, a lot of other things that can be covered in a prenup. One thing that I've had many people do, especially with couples that both have separate assets going into the marriage or income streams, or one of them is going to do something like give up their job and become a stay-at-home parent, I've seen them address how the household marital finances are going to be handled during the marriage. That's not even in contemplation of the divorce or death of one of the parties. They talk about, right in that agreement, how they're going to conduct their financial lives as a married couple. And there's a lot of, you know, positivity actually in that conversation, because you and I both know, as divorce attorneys, one of the major reasons why people get divorced is because they're not in sync financially. I mean, how many times have you had people come to you getting divorced complaining about their spouse being stingy or being a spendthrift? You know, two people who just have, and they never talked about it. They never addressed that issue before they got married.
Well, and I mean, one of the things I've seen many, many times, I'm sure you have too, is when you have that situation, now the person comes up, you know, ends up in your office, and either they were the saver and the other one spent all their money, and now they're having to get the bad news that they have to turn over half of what they saved to the other party. And they think, what? You know, that person wasn't responsible. I was. So now I'm being penalized. You know, people are not happy to hear that. But the bottom line is that earnings are marital, I'm pretty sure, in every state, because, you know, you're supposed to be supporting each other once you enter into the legal union of marriage. And so your earnings are marital, and earnings mean any kind of earnings, you know, stock options or 401k passive matches, or anything that you get as a result of your sweat is a marital asset. And the only way that you can protect your earnings from being marital is through a writing, an agreement that they're not. Other than that, there's no way to protect them.
No.
It was separate assets. You can keep separate. If you have a 401k before you got married, you want to leave it there. You have an inheritance. You don't commingle. You leave it in a separate account. Fine. You have a piece of property, a real property that you bought before the marriage. You leave it titled in your own name. You never use marital funds to maintain it or pay taxes on it or anything like that. Great. It'll stay separate. There's ways to keep things separate. But right. With your earnings, no. There is no way.
All those things you were just talking about, that commingling of assets, using marital assets to on separate property, those are things that then can bring separate property into the marital estate. That's right. Another reason why people do prenups, because in the prenup, in that agreement, people will often spell out that if marital funds are used on separate property, that's not recoverable. I've had that language included. Or if a common one that I have seen is where one of the parties, say, owns a real property, owns a house, or that the parties are both going to live in, and one of the parties is going to put some personal effort into that property, decorating, painting, one of them is good at doing improvements. Often there will be language that's not a recoverable type of improvement to that separate property. So a lot of those things you were just talking about that could bring separate property into the marital estate, that's another reason why you might do a prenup, because you can spell out those situations that even if they happen, they don't bring it into the marital estate.
Yeah, and another one along those lines in terms of improvements or appreciation is a business. And especially if you have a business prior to the marriage, you've spent a lot of time on it, or maybe it's a family business, maybe it's something that, your dad started or something. Appreciation on a business due to marital efforts could be construed as, that value of that appreciation could be considered a marital asset at the end of a marriage if there's no prenup. And so that's another big reason why people enter into prenups, is to protect their businesses.
Yep. And you mentioned, just families. That's another reason why I have often seen people come and need a prenup. Not necessarily that they are driving, they're the driving force behind wanting the prenup, but very often families, if the family has assets or businesses or a big inheritance expectancy is down the road, the family will really be wanting a prenup put into place. Mom and dad, grandma, that sort of situation. So that's another reason to try, because again, Rebecca, you mentioned earlier, an inheritance is often kept separate and considered separate property. But if it's commingled into the marital estate, if things are done during the time of the marriage that change the characterization of the inheritance as separate, it can be pulled into marital. But in the prenup, again, you can set that separately. So that's another driving factor behind doing a prenup. But one of the things that I really wanted to cover in this, because this is a universal, at least for me as a divorce attorney or family law attorney drafting prenups, they are one of the more uncomfortable situations for people to be getting involved in. And that leads to problems in and of itself.
Because you basically have to go through your whole divorce
right
before you get married.
Yeah, it doesn't scream hearts and flowers,
no.
Happy, happy days when you have to sit down with your intended and say, so if we do get divorced, I really don't want to give you anything. It's not a very comfortable conversation.
No, it's terrible.
And,
And you know, we do recommend that you each have separate counsel.
Well, it's a requirement in, right. in most states.
Well, that, I mean, it's parties. Not necessarily required in every state.
No.
But then if one person has counsel and the other one doesn't, then there could be, you know, potentially a duress or overreaching argument down the road, which could maybe get the agreement set aside. So for both people's sake, you know, you should each have separate counsel. But when you bring in two lawyers, each lawyer is going to have something to say and, you know, advocate for their client and all that sort of thing. So,
well, there's a lot to be said for that, though, because this is one of the issues that I run into, usually with the less moneyed spouse or intended spouse. This is their only chance to negotiate what will happen if the marriage does end. And very often, they don't want to do what they term argue or seem like they're being greedy or ask for too much. But they have to look at the situation as if this were happening down the road. Now they have gotten married. Now they have put love, time, attention, and effort into this relationship, into this partnership. And if it does unfortunately not work out, they are going to live with what they negotiated at the beginning, in many cases, at the beginning, at the time of the prenup. So having an attorney in there to negotiate for them can be critical because, again, this goes back to being a very difficult conversation to have with your fiancé.
I mean, it allows them to kind of look behind or go behind their lawyer and say, well, my lawyer said this. I don't know. I mean, I'm just letting her or him, you know, drive the bus. So I didn't know what to ask for. I mean, so I guess it helps from that perspective. And as a lawyer myself, when I have the non-moneyed spouse, or soon to be spouse, I always try to look at, you know, different maybe areas to, you know, okay, if it's 5 years, what would they have gotten? At 10 years, what would they have gotten? At 15 years, what would they have gotten? And actually put some breakpoints in the prenup, you know, especially for potential spousal support or something like that. So, you know, because the longer you're married, you usually can get more spousal support, depending on if there's a disparity in incomes and things like that, and, you know, whatever the situation is. But I just usually try to look at, okay, what would this person get if they had been married 10 years or 20 years? And look at all the areas, you know, what would they get from a property settlement? What would they get for spousal support?
That's important, I think, for people to understand is what the prenuptial agreement is doing is varying from what would have happened under the law in your state if you didn't have one. So all states have laws in place as to what happens at the time of a divorce with respect to dividing the marital property, with respect to supporting an ex-spouse, supporting children, et cetera. So what the prenuptial agreement is doing is varying from that. But at a baseline, both parties need to understand what the law would have provided if they didn't have an agreement.
Right, you know, and that's what I kind component. Of always try to do when I'm representing the non-moneyed spouse. But of course, the moneyed spouse is trying to give that person less than that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going into a prenuptial agreement.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com. Also, make sure to download your free meditation at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation. Coming up, more from Susan and Rebecca on We Want Prenup, We Want Prenup. Should you be like Kanye or Jeff Bezos?
Where I represented a guy who owned a large, I don't want to say the name because people may know who he is, but a large luxury car dealership, the largest in the country of that particular luxury brand. And I did his divorce, and all was well with that, and he was very happy. And then, I don't know, maybe a year later or something, he called me up and said, I'm getting married tomorrow. I need a prenup today.
Oh my God. They all do that.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including Fresh Start Fitness, Thrive and Shine After Divorce, with celebrity fitness trainer Jennifer Giamo.
You know, is not comparing yourself to anyone else who's gone through, you know, I have friends who've gone through a divorce and they're like, oh, they bounce back. They're online dating in like 2 weeks. I'm like, wait a minute, what? So I think not comparing yourself to other people's experiences, because everyone goes through it differently and some people just take longer to heal.
And now we return to today's show.
Right. Well, and that's a situation. I mean, I've always said when I've had the moneyed spouse or the soon-to-be spouse, your fiance, there's that element, and this is where it gets touchy. There's that element to the negotiation of a prenup where it's, if you won't enter into a prenup I can live with, then there won't be a marriage, right? That's sort of the underlying current, and I think that's what makes it so uncomfortable. I had a case just a couple of months ago where a former client who had gone through a divorce and felt that there had been, you know, some unfairness in how the property settlement worked out in that under the law, not because of the negotiations, but because of what the law provided. And so it was extremely important to him that he have a prenuptial agreement in place. He very much wanted to get married, and he had a younger fiance who had not been married before, and they were unable to come to terms, and that marriage did not happen. There was a line in the sand for him, and it didn't happen.
Or there's the other side of it, where I represented a guy who owned a large I don't want to say the name because people may know who he is, but a large luxury car dealership, the largest in the country of that particular luxury brand. And I did his divorce, and all was well with that, and he was very happy. And then, I don't know, maybe a year later or something, he called me up and said, I'm getting married tomorrow. I need a prenup today.
Oh my God. They all do that. Oh, by the way, can you bring it to the church? We're going to sign it there.
Yeah. I'm like, no. So, you know, one of the things you definitely want to make sure that you're not doing is, you know, setting yourself up for a duress conversation down the road. You know, oh, well, we signed the prenup at the back of the church, you know, right before I walked down the aisle. You know, that's not a good thing. I mean, you want to make sure, you know, some states actually have, you know, a mandatory cooling off period. But, you know, at least give yourself a week or two in between when it was signed at a very minimum and when you actually get married.
I mean, every state, I think, has a statute or a law that sets out requirements for what makes a prenuptial agreement enforceable. And the timing of the execution of that is definitely one element. I know, Rebecca, you and I both are in California, and there's I believe it has to be signed 7 days in advance.
7 days,
in
California,
the
it's 7 days.
Wedding in there.
In Florida, it doesn't have a time, but, you know, it's going to be a deciding factor for the judge. But, you know, and they look at all the different circumstances as well. But, you know, don't set yourself up for failure. And the other thing is definitely make sure that you disclose all your finances. That's something that's certainly required. I had a situation one time where the husband and wife had entered into a prenuptial agreement. The husband had lots of assets in a Swiss bank account that he didn't disclose to the wife. And then they got married. They'd been married for 15 years or so. They had signed many joint tax returns together where he did not claim that income that he had received on those accounts. And then the IRS found out and were offering him some sort of immunity or whatever if he came forward and paid all the tax on that. But he had to come forward and tell her because she had signed those joint tax returns. And then he basically was like, oh, but you're on your own. You'll have to get your own counsel. You'll have to figure it out yourself. And that's when she showed up in my office and was ready to.
I take it she didn't have to go it alone in that case.
No, well, we ended up doing her divorce then.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't happy about how he handled it. But, you know, obviously the prenup was easily going to be able to be set aside. But here's the thing about that one. We could have easily set the prenup aside, but we kind of figured out that because he had kept everything separate the whole time, that she was actually better off under the prenup.
Well, that's always something to look at the time of enforceability. And that's the thing with prenups is people don't get that, you know, there's the discomfort around negotiating them at the time of the wedding, but they only become really relevant at the time that you're seeking to enforce them, which in most cases is when you're getting the divorce. And that's when the challenges come up. We've already talked about the one challenge of duress. Oh, I signed it under duress. The people were sitting in the church. I'm in my white dress at the back of the church waiting to go down the aisle. And you put a piece of paper in front of me. I had to sign it. You know, that's that argument. But my experience has been that the number one challenge that you see to prenups is what we call unconscionability. And that basically breaks down to either at the time it's entered into or in some states at the time you're seeking to enforce that prenup, applying the terms would be unconscionable, which is really so unfair that it just shocks the conscience to apply it.
Well, it's just interesting to me, though, because like that's the whole point of having a prenup. I just can't believe that's the one thing that I don't necessarily agree with, even though that is the law, because, you know, that's the risk that you take. That's the consideration. You know, each party enters into a contract and, you know, it could be that neither party has a dime to rub together at the end of the thing, or it could be that one party made a lot of money and the other one didn't. You know, that's the risk that you take. But, you know, going into just touching on the Jeff Bezos situation a little bit, you know, when they got married 25 years ago or whenever it was, he was working on Wall Street and he might have been making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, whatever it was, but he wasn't worth $137 billion. They didn't have a prenup, but had they had a prenup, this is certainly one of those situations where it would be so lopsided at this point that it probably wouldn't be upheld because then she would not be entitled to any of the $137 billion. So that's a situation where I don't necessarily agree with that because I'm more of a strict constructionist myself. I feel like you entered into it, you signed it. That's what you should do. But there are many states that don't agree with me on that.
Yeah, both of the states I practice in, Connecticut and California, do look to unconscionability at the time of seeking to enforce it. And, you know, I think what the courts or the laws concept behind that is, and the cases that I've been involved in around that, don't look to just, you know, the dollars and cents, like has the estate grown so disproportionately. But all the cases that I've been involved in or seen have been a case where they've grown because of the joint effort of both of the parties. So there's a leading case in Connecticut that involved a married couple that got married, got a prenup. then got married. He started a car wash. The wife worked in the business, helped him grow it. That grew to like 20 car washes. It was worth millions and millions of dollars at the time of the divorce. And the prenup said she would get nothing. And the court said that's unconscionable because she was an integral part of growing this estate, growing the marital assets. And so the court actually just invalidated the prenup in that case. There's different things a court can do.
Yeah. I mean, I've in Florida where I've practiced, I represented a woman who signed a prenup, had worked in the funeral business with the husband. It was his family's funeral business. And she was right there next to him every single day doing just as much as he was. And because she had signed the prenuptial agreement, she was stuck with what it had. And she helped it grow, and it grew by millions and millions of dollars. And so, but Florida doesn't have that provision. Florida's more, you know, you sign it, it was valid in all ways, and you're stuck with it now.
Well, I think that brings up a good point, is every state is different. Every state does have laws around prenups, and it's very important that you have an attorney draft it, or if you are the non-drafting partner, have an attorney review it that knows the laws of your state very well in this particular area.
For sure. And the other thing is,
that's going to be a key.
I can't believe we're almost out of time. Like, this went so fast.
Keeps happening to us.
Yeah. But I just want to make sure that I get in there that anything with regard to children is not going to be enforceable. I mean, you can write it all in there as much as you want, but the court always has the final authority on what's in the best interest of a child. So you can't like predetermine a parenting plan for children or predetermine child support. Oh, we're only going to limit it to $200 a month or whatever. That's not necessarily going to be enforceable. I mean, if it ends up being enforceable, it's because the court took a look at the whole thing and said, yes, it's okay. And it comports with the law and it comports with what's in the best interest of the child. But it won't just automatically be rubber stamped like other types of financial provisions are.
Right. So basically, you can put anything into your agreement that you want, but most, I think every state, the basic law around children and child support is that is to be determined in the best interests of the children at the time of the divorce, at the time of the separation. But there are a couple other provisions that you do see in prenups quite often. You kind of referenced one earlier when you talked about looking at what might happen in 5 years, 10 years. Sometimes people build that in as what I call as a sunset provision, where over a period of time, either the provisions of the agreement change. So if you're married for 5 years, this is what the settlement looks like. If you're married for 10 years, this is what it looks like. I think it's funny because I read when I was getting together the information for this episode that despite that song, Kanye West actually wasn't going to or didn't think he needed a prenup when he married Kim. But they eventually did sign one, and the provision that at least that I read about in this article, who knows if it's true, is that Kim gets $1 million a year in the event of a divorce for every year that they're married. So, but a lot of agreements will also fade out or go to the sunset after a certain number of years. And certainly when I represent the non-moneyed spouse, that's something that I'm looking to or at least want to explore on behalf of my client is if these two people stay married for 20 years or a certain number of years, should this agreement remain in place? And often I've had clauses that will say it will, you know, will terminate after a period of time. Or I've had people come back 10 years into the marriage and modify the terms of their prenuptial agreement.
Right. And I did want to make that point, actually, because a prenuptial agreement just means it was signed prior to the marriage. But nothing stops people from doing a postnuptial agreement as well, which is simply an agreement after you get married. It gets a little bit more complicated because there's now already some marital stuff that's probably accrued. And so the postnuptial agreement will have to address that unless you sign it like the day after you get married or something. But if you've been married 5 or 10 years at that point, there may be some retirement assets or some other things that have accrued, and certainly some earnings. Maybe you've bought a house or whatever. So that will have to be addressed in the postnuptial agreement. But to your point, you can modify the prenup or even sign a new agreement after you get married.
Yeah. And you know, I did one not that long ago. I was not involved in the prenuptial agreement, but it was a couple that had been married now for 15 years. They had children. Things had changed in their lives. And the prenup, the terms of the prenuptial agreement were actually causing strife in their marriage. It was something that in that case, the wife felt that, you know, it was just very unfair, and it was setting up a dynamic that she didn't feel just led to a true partnership. And they came in, sat down, mediated a different postnuptial agreement, went to their individual counsel, reviewed it, and signed it. And I got an email from her not that long ago that things are going great.
Oh,
that,
well, see,
that was wonderful.
I had a case where the guy was convinced to finally rip up the prenuptial agreement. And then 2 years later, she filed for divorce, of course.
Well, there's a little bit of everything out there, right?
Well, I think we're about out of time here. So I just wanted to make the final point that, you know, if you feel like you need a prenuptial agreement, you should definitely look into getting one. Don't think that it's part of people who are just wealthy. It's definitely something for whoever feels like they need one. And, you know, definitely get outside counsel if you can. And, you know, you can work with a mediator to mediate the terms of a prenuptial agreement. And Breaking Free Mediation, of course, is here to help you with that if you need that.
Yeah. So, you know, I was reading an article just before we taped this, and a relationship expert said in one of those articles, you'd have to be crazy not to have a prenup before marriage. You insure your car, your home, your health. You should insure your insurable assets against divorce. It's not about love. It's just business. So remember, you know, it's something to consider. And in the end, even Kanye got one.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.